Well, they're back. The Indiana House Democratic Caucus returned to the State House this past week after a record 36-day walkout to Illinois. Caucus leaders said they had succeeded in softening what they described as the Republican majority's radical agenda. GOP leaders disputed the notion that Democrats had scored any major victories, saying the concessions that were offered could have been achieved through simple negotiation. Any lingering disagreement over what the walkout did or didn't accomplish is sure to give way to other disputes as lawmakers scramble to pass a two-year state budget, new district maps, and a controversial education reform package in the remaining 4 weeks of the 2011 session. So how will the session's compressed timetable affect lawmakers' spending decisions? How will their final budget differ from the no-frills spending plan that Governor Mitch Daniels offered back in January? And how will that final budget affect school children, homeowners, employers, and recipients of state benefits? All that and more on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. We collaborate with companies like Scale Computing, one of the country's most promising new companies. Scale Computing, the next generation of data storage. The idea economy is here.
During their walkout, House Democrats said repeatedly that they were busy crafting amendments to improve the legislation that would be up for debate upon their return. Well, even their Republican counterparts would have to agree that they lived up to their word in that regard. By the time the House proceedings resumed this past week, more than 500 amendments had been offered on just 8 bills. About 350 of those amendments dealt with the budget bill alone. Most of the proposed changes considered during the Democrats' first week back were rejected on party-line votes, but Democratic lawmakers are pledging to continue the fight. Joining me to discuss the budget process and where things are likely to end up are Republican Senator Luke Kinley of Noblesville, chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, Democratic Senator John Broden of South Bend, the ranking minority member of that panel, Republican Representative Jeff Espick of Uniondale, chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, and Chris Rule, director of the Indiana Office of Management and Budget. And I thank you all for being here on what I know was a very busy and very tiring week, so thank you all. Jeff Espick, let's start with you, because the budget starts with you and your committee, so it's probably appropriate we start with you today. In the end, what effect, if any, will the walkout have on the budget?
First of all, John, I don't want to disagree with you, but I would tell you the budget started 3 or 4 months ago, maybe 5 months ago, with hearings that we had for the Budget Committee members through the fall months, preparing initial reports, getting revenue forecasts in December. So it's not a month process, it's a 4 or 5 month process, and bipartisanly worked on, looked at revenue forecasting. I think that walkout affects things. You can't take time off task and not hurt something. You just don't spend the time giving things a proper scrutiny. You move more quickly than you might have otherwise done, and it creates problems.
Chris Rule, any concern that some of the governor's fiscal priorities might be damaged or hindered in some way by the walkout?
You know, I don't really have any concerns about that. I think we were pretty clear, to Jeff's point, early on what our four parameters were at a high level, and I think Jeff's budget certainly adhered to those, so I don't have any concerns as we work our way through this process that ultimately we won't end up with a very good end product. Jeff's right, anytime you take time off, you have a little bit of a setback in terms of having to act maybe a little more quickly, but there's plenty of time left, and if everybody rolls up their sleeves, gets to work, and does some diligence over the next 5 weeks, we'll get it done and we'll be okay.
Luke Kinley, your committee did something a bit unusual back before the Democratic House Caucus indicated it would be returning this past week. You announced in partnership with Jeff Espick that you would be initiating hearings, even though you didn't have an actual bill per se to deal with. Did that work? Did that have the intended effect?
You know, I think it did. We took the bill that had passed out of the Ways and Means Committee, and John and I have had 5 or 6 meetings and had a lot of public testimony, and I think it's been beneficial to the process for us to give people a chance to talk, to tell us what they think. And we actually had live members of the real public there, not just lobbyists on some particular issues. So I think it was a very fruitful exercise.
And John Broden, you're a ranking minority member of that committee. Good idea to get ahead of the process, even though your Democratic House colleagues were still away at that point?
Oh, I think it was absolutely the right thing to do. The lion's share of the issues which were most concerned of the House Democrats really weren't in 1001. Certainly they had some disagreements with that bill, but that really wasn't what sparked the walkout, as far as I understood anyway. So I thought, you know, pretty much, you know, we had an idea of what was in 1001 because it had passed Ways and Means, and while there were some changes made to it, we certainly had a framework, but I think it was a very opportune time to get moving forward so that we're not too far behind as we head into the last few weeks here.
And several of you have mentioned that compressed timetable with 4 weeks or so left, and you know, Jeff Hespick, you pointed out that the process is actually a 4 or 5 month process, but you know, it always seems that the budget bill seems to be a final hour process when conferees are running back and forth across the rotunda, and there are always some surprises. At the, I remember back to 1993 when right. That's how the state got Riverboat Gaming, was as an 11th hour addition to a budget. It really will come down to some last-minute maneuvering, don't you think?
Well, I think it'll be done at the last moment. I don't think it'll be done at the last moment because of last-minute maneuvering. I think we have been working actually with the governor and with Senator Kinley and hopefully with the Democrat Party as they will want to join in for months now. And so I think we know where we're going. But having said that, it'll be at the last moment that we adopt the budget because, quite frankly, we want to make sure everybody's still there when the last moment comes and the other bills are dealt with and there's not another walkout or something like that.
So. Well, and the fact that you control both chambers, that reduces some of the last-minute maneuvering, I would think, as well in negotiation, perhaps.
Yeah.
Not a leading question or anything.
I'm curious about his answer.
Yeah, all right. We'll stop. We'll put all the cameras on you. And we'll all right. Silence is telling, right? First of all, one thing, of course, that could affect things in the next 4 weeks is the updated revenue forecast, which everybody will be watching closely. What can we expect?
You know, I think you can expect maybe a marginal improvement. Would be my expectation. If you look at some of the economic variables, you see most of the forecasters projecting kind of slow, steady growth. We've seen some improvements in revenue certainly in the last 6 to 9 months. We're slightly ahead of the current forecast, so I think if nothing changed, you'd see this new forecast pick up kind of what we're ahead so far. But I think you have to recognize, you know, despite some good economic news. There was a report out where 2009 Indiana was in the top 10 in personal income growth for 2009. You know, lots of positive signs, unemployment rates, some other things. There are still some concerns out there, whether it be, you know, high oil prices for an extended period of time, and we saw what impact that had a couple years ago. Some of these debt crises going on in the global economy. Housing, there's some concerns I hear from some economists on potentially a double dip. They're maybe not as pronounced in Indiana as other places. So I think we're cautiously optimistic that we're in a period where there's probably less downside risk in the revenue than there was 2 years ago in the last budget, but we're certainly not out of the woods. And I think, again, we can expect, you know, slow, steady growth, about what we've seen over the last 6 to 9 months.
Let me jump in here,
yeah,
John.
Yeah, please do. Luke Kendall.
I'm going to – first, let's step back. I'm going to give a promo to the governor here. Indiana is in so much better shape than so many states. I mean, we don't really face the prospect of having to raise taxes like Illinois has been doing over here, or having no reserves. And it's a lot of it, the credit is due to the Daniels administration and their fiscal approach to these things. And remarkably, they have improved the services of many areas of government at the same time that we've had to trim costs and control expenses. And so they've put us in a really good position, and I think the last thing we want to do is deviate from that financially responsible position as a state as we look at what are the right opportunities for us to move forward in places like education or any other place where we think we need to do things to make Indiana better.
Let's go across the piece of Senate carpet here to your colleague John Brodin. You're representing Democrats today. What do you think of that? I mean, is it the wrong time to deviate from that no-frills approach?
Well, I think on a bipartisan basis, we've been a very frugal state. I mean, the budgets that we've crafted over the last several sessions have generally been done on a bipartisan basis. I know I've supported some of the budgets, some I haven't. So I think you know, we should continue that spirit of bipartisanship where we know what our limits are, we know what the restraints are, but we also make sure we don't miss opportunities to invest in our children and invest in higher education. Remember, those investments sometimes create they create the jobs of tomorrow. So we always need to make sure we're moving forward, but also, you know, making sure we're staying within those constraints. I would agree with Chris's outlook on the economy as well. Japan is another factor that you know, could have some short-term impacts on our state and national economy. So, yeah, we do need to be cautious and prudent, but I think we need to, you know, look for opportunities as well.
You know, I think what's interesting in all of this is these kind of fiscal issues have been heightened across the country in the Midwest and nationally. You have, to Senator Kemley's point, a much stronger recognition of what it means to live within your income and what the consequences are when you don't do that. So I've been encouraged by, you know, members of both party, all four caucuses, recognizing, listen, step one is no tax increases, live within our means, spend frugally, prioritize scarce resources to our highest priorities. And there's been recognition and acknowledgement of that for 4 or 5 months, and that's been a very positive thing where expectations are aligned with what we can afford to do and what we need to do for the citizens of the state.
Although during the floor debate and then subsequently the third reading debate and vote, I should say, this past week on House Bill 1011, Jeff Espick, you sort of chided your Democratic colleagues for offering up all these amendments that I alluded to in the introduction. I think you put a price tag on them if they all were enacted of what, close to $500 million?
$500 million they were going to spend that we don't have, quite frankly.
And that's why I think you ended up adopting about 10 or so of the amendments.
I think the time, first of all, the time for fighting is over. We did waste some time in this session. That 5 weeks hurt. And I hope there's not the bipartisan attitude in fighting. And I don't see the spirit of fighting in the House right now. Hope it doesn't happen. We did adopt 10 of the Democrat amendments into the budget. And they were small amendments, but they were important to them. They presented them. Frankly, I looked for amendments that I could adopt that were made a bipartisan budget. I think that's important to do. So we were happy to do that, but they did. They presented a lot of amendments that we couldn't afford. But in the end, we got the budget out. I'm hopeful we'll have some bipartisan support when we're done.
John Broden, let me ask you now. The ball goes over to your court, so to speak. Obviously, 350 or so amendments were requested. Not nearly that many, of course, actually were considered, but a number of them were. Will we see a similar flurry of amendment activity on the part of Democrats in the Senate?
Well, we'll have to work hard to get to 350.
There's 20 of members.
There's only 13
members.
Yeah.
Legislators are never without good ideas.
Maybe not 350, but how about, let's say, 35.
Okay, there we go. 10. Traditionally, we've had a list that we would consider, I guess you call it your realistic list. I mean, these are things that, hey, we think would improve the budget. We think there's an opportunity for bipartisan support. But then we also view it as an opportunity to sort of present our alternative vision of what the budget should be, and we'll make sure that that lives within our means. That'll certainly be one of our goals. But there may be some priorities in terms of how school funding dollars. There may not be an argument over how much money goes into the school funding form, but there may be big arguments as to how it's distributed and that sort of thing. So we'll certainly look forward to a vigorous debate on sort of how we spend the money that we do have. That's what I would envision.
And I definitely want to get into the education, since that does represent a half of, or more perhaps, of the state spending. One question, though, about an amendment that was sought by House Democrats, and that was removing from the governor the ability or authority to withhold funds that had been already appropriated by the General Assembly. Scott Peloth, the Democratic House member, said that turns the failure to have the governor having this ability to withhold funds basically makes the budget a suggestion box as opposed to a spending plan. Is that something that your caucus feels strongly about?
Well, you know, I would just say this. This goes back, I guess, a number of decades here in terms of governors having that authority. Republicans, I understand, kind of wanted to remove it at various times when we
Frank
had
Obama,
a
Democratic
governor
used it during some
now
tough
vice
times.
Versa. I'd like to see us come maybe to some sort of compromise on. I realize that we're gone 8 to 9 months out of the year, and sometimes the governor does need to take steps when we're gone, and some of those may mean spending less here and there. But we've seen some pretty dramatic reductions in some areas that you wonder if there's some policy going on sort of taking advantage of the crisis situation, and I wouldn't mind trying to you know, rein that in, maybe reducing how much the authority the governor does have without taking it away completely.
And I'm guessing the rest of you would say that's chances of that are slight.
You know, John, that argument went on the floor of the House, and you're exactly right. House Democrats said strip the governor of this authority to take care of business when we're gone. I said, first of all, none of us want to be full-time legislators, and the public doesn't want us to be full-time legislators. That won't bring about better government. This governor, Governor Daniels, did a wonderful job getting us through this financial crisis. And I will tell you, in a bipartisan sense, the last time it was done in a similar nature and vein and amount was Governor O'Bannon back in 02. And I still have a copy of his deficit management plan for 02 when he delayed payments to local units of government of $750 million. cut spending for schools, reverted all kinds of dedicated funds, just like this Governor Daniels has done, to get us through a crisis. Governor's got to have that authority. I don't want to get partisan here, but a Democrat stood on the floor trying to argue against the governor doing this, and he says, let us bite the bullet here. And I said, okay, start biting right now. And what I got was $500 million more motions to spend. So if you want to be big boys and girls, you got to do it.
John Brodin, it sounds like a no, but we'll keep an eye on that. Luke Kim, I do want to get into some of the specifics here of the bill.
Okay.
Education, that's the biggie. The funding amounts are basically equivalent to what we saw in fiscal 2011, $6.2 billion each year of the biennium. The controversy surrounds not that dollar amount, but the way the money is distributed.
Right. You know, we had a hearing where we had Tony Bennett come in and put all these education
State Superintendent
bills.
Of Public Instruction.
That's right. We had him put all these education reform bills on the table and give us the whole package of how does all this work together and how does it interact with the budget. And I thought that was a fascinating presentation because I think that is the key issue this year to produce the reform in education that gives us a chance to work together and figure out how we can make it be better. Now, we don't have to argue whether education is good or bad. All of us concede that in tomorrow's world, it needs to be better. John talked about education of our kids there. So I think that's going to play into the budget itself, and those bills will. And if we can't pass them in some other form, they may need to go into the budget.
Some of the education
like the
riverboats
did in 1993, because this is the key issue. And I think I'm glad the Democrats are back in the House, because I think it's going to take both sides to craft a really constructive plan that's balanced to go forward. And I think that's my hope in these last two or three weeks.
And the Republican plan, in short, would basically have money follow students.
That's right.
We could get into a lot of specifics, but I know, John Brodin, Democrats have said this could be devastating to some school districts, urban school districts, rural, that don't see a lot of population enrollment growth. How concerned are you?
Well, to put it succinctly, John, my biggest concern is that there's multiple things going on, and I don't know that these sort of stable and slightly declining enrollment school corporations, that they can withstand all the things that we are talking about doing. One, we're talking about taking away the levy replacement grants, which are so-called circuit breaker credits. We're also talking about money follows the child, elimination of the so-called re-ghoster. We're talking about vouchers to private schools. We're talking about expansion of charter schools. All of these are going to hit a subset of school corporations that have about one in every three children who are enrolled in schools here in the state of Indiana. That's Indianapolis, Evansville, Hammond, Fort Wayne, South Bend. These have tens of thousands of school children in there, and it's not just one thing that's hitting them. It's like four things hitting them at once, and I'm very concerned about that.
Well, Jeff Espick, how about this? I mean, you do have a situation where, because of the governor's education reforms, it appears that the state will fund private school vouchers to a certain degree. It appears that there will be additional charter schools. And if the pot of money is that $6.2 billion in each year of the biennium, doesn't that make each piece of the pie a little bit narrower?
Well, let's understand this first of all, John. On all these issues, whether it be vouchers or we call them choice scholarships, but whatever you want to talk about, every one of those children has a right to a public education in Indiana. More than one out of 10 Hoosier children are educated either at home or in private or parochial schools. Every one of those children's parents is a taxpayer, and they have the right to send all that 100,000 kids to the public schools tomorrow. Okay, so they're entitled to that, just like I was when I sent my kids to the public schools. And so if those parents want to do that, we've got an extra 100,000 kids, 10% more kids in the schools, and no way to pay for it. That $6.25 billion would not go up for education. It would be divided more narrowly. So when people talk about, oh, we can't do vouchers or scholarships or all this and that, we can't give a little dribble to these kids to keep them going to alternative schools, that's silly. I mean, it truly is silly, because if they all came to the public schools, they're entitled to do that. And then we pay full price for them.
You know, the challenge of the debate here is so much of the focus, at least in the General Assembly, I think to our frustration sometimes, is on the institution, on the corporation, on the district, on the adults, rather than what Jeff said, which is what's in the best interest of these children here. And that may be a public school, that may be a charter school, that may be a private school. And, you know, how do we help all of those kids out? I mean, the reality of it is, by any objective measure, whether it's dollars per kid, percent of your general fund budget, percent of personal income, Hoosiers dig incredibly deep today to fund public schools. And that's been a priority and will continue to be a priority, and rightly so. At the same time, expanding some options here for kids to get a better education will lead to better results for all of us in the end, and ultimately produce more dollars for future General Assemblies.
Closing minutes, a couple items too. The House bill 1001 basically tracks with the governor's spending proposal that was released back in January, but a few exceptions. There aren't the cuts of 3% for higher education. Right. You don't tap the $200 million bank insurance fund. You are a little easier on some of the health programs, choice program, and some other things. Can you live with which do you like more, what the governor put forth or what the House sent over?
You know, Jeff has done a good job of...
Let me talk to you about that.
Jeff has done a good job of building on the governor's plans, and I hope to do a good job of building on Jeff's plans.
What a political statement that is.
Well, one thing in there that several of those things are probably controversial. You get into potential tuition caps for colleges. We'll have to save that probably for another show. But one thing would be the speeding up of the collection of county option income tax funds that the state overpaid to counties during the downtimes, during the recession. I think the governor's plan called for the state to pull that money in over a four-year period. The House bill calls for it to be collected over a two-year period. Could put a significant burden, could it not, John Brodin, on counties that perhaps have already spent that money?
Well, yes, and I would definitely prefer the longer-term approach. I mean, there is no county in this state that is flush with cash, that hasn't also been hit very hard by the recession and hasn't seen their other tax revenues decline. So they've been tightening their belts, too, and so I think we need to work with them on that.
And the challenge with this, you know, by way of reference, when the recession hit our revenues the last 2 years or so, there's a lag here in terms of how those monies get distributed ultimately to our counties and then the subunits underneath them. So they're now feeling the effects of the recession 2 years delayed. So it's kind of one of these things that's inevitable, and just the way the math works, there's nothing nefarious or erroneous about it. It's just the function of the system we have.
And last question, this gets done by the 29th of April. Anybody say no?
I vote yes.
I'm a yes.
If we have unanimity.
If my Democrat colleagues stay in town, we'll be done by the 29th.
All right. That's the final word, I'm afraid. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Luke Kenley of Noblesville, Democratic Senator John Brodin of South Bend, Republican Representative Jeff Espick of Uniondale, and Chris Rule of the Indiana Office of Management and Budget. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, we shine the spotlight on education, which promises to dominate the remainder of the session. To join the discussion or pose a question for our guests, visit the Indiana Lawmakers discussion on the WFYI Facebook page. Each week, I'll select one of your questions for our panel of experts. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Ed, your take on the walkout and its effect on the budget.
Wow, where do we start, John? Well, the Democrats did come back, assiduously avoided the hot tubs at the comfort suites. I think that it's going to be until the election of 2012 before we really know what the effect was. In terms of the effect on the process this year, really not much. It's not going to mean much for the budget. They're getting everything done, as the panel just said. The education bills have passed through the House, and things are moving on track with the labor bills with some Democratic amendments. Things really didn't get stopped. The key thing, though, is what's going to happen in terms of what the public believes, you know, who was wrong, why they did it, you know, how well the Democrats educated the public, as they said, about things. We won't know till after November 2012.
And how much 11th hour negotiating will we see? You know, we pointed out during the roundtable that perhaps not as much because Republicans are now in control of both the Senate and the House, and of course, Republican in the governor's office. Does that make for a nicer, neater package when the budget's finally out of the pipeline?
Well, I think that there won't be very much negotiation this year, but only because there isn't much to negotiate about. And what little negotiation there will be, I think, will be between the House and Senate Republicans and the House and Senate and the governor over just little details. And it seems like they're very, very close on what the actual content of the budget will be. They really have the parameters outlined. They had that done coming in. They agreed on on some bottom lines, and there's really not a whole lot to move within silos now in the budget.
It has been suggested, and Luke Kenley reiterated, if I could say it, the point today, that the budget bill may end up encompassing more than it does now, perhaps some or all of the education reform proposals. Is that the likely path here?
I think you may be a little bit pessimistic on that, but I can never doubt, you know, Senator Kenley when it comes to the legislative process. But it seems like we're able to separate the two education bills, the voucher, the others, and we're able to put the higher ed things in the budget. I think that things will stay separate. There may be some elements of education thrown in there, but it won't be a catch-all Christmas tree.
And it was pretty clear the governor will retain the right, in all likelihood, to withhold funds if the economy turns south and he deems it necessary.
Yeah, Scott Pilaf, the Democratic assistant floor leader, you know, tried to get that changed, but this is something that governors, even as recently as Democratic Governor Frank O'Bannon, have done, and it's not going to change.
All right. We'll have to leave it there, but we'll look forward to next week and the 3 or 4 weeks beyond. Thanks, Ed. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at WFYI.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.